ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
From an Ipswich fish and chip shop to the epicentre of Australian politics.
Please explain.
Pauline Hanson is making
its One Nation.
This is the unlikely story of One Nation.
Well, I'm back.
Is it a passing protest vote or a permanent realignment of Australian politics?
Whether you love her or hate her, truth is stranger than fiction.
The making of One Nation. To hear the full series, search for The Making of One Nation on ABC Listen.
Welcome to the music show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford and it's Cover Story. We take one great song and lots of cover versions. Not all of them are great, but they're all worth talking about.
Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you. I love your better spot.
The dramatic pause that sold 20 million records. Today on Cover Story, In Excess's Never Tear Us Apart. One of four hit singles that came from the 1987 album Kick, started out as a bluesy demo by In Excess's keyboardist and main songwriter Andrew Farris. Frontman Michael Hutchence gave it lyrics and producer Chris Thomas gave it synthesizers, and then the public gave it a place in every Australian music best of list. The covers come from all over the place, well beyond just Australian artists. You're going to hear English, American, Welsh, French and Lanarkshire accents on today's show. And my guests are ABC Classic presenter Alice Keith, also occasionally the presenter of this program, and Double J's Al Newstead, a summit of sister stations ready to consider each cover on today's show. Let's start, as we always do, with the original 1987 In Excess, Never Tear Us Apart.
Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you. I love your precious heart. I was standing. You were there. Two worlds collided and they could never tear us apart. Never, ever tear us apart.
Well, there's the original version of the subject of today's cover story. It's In Excess and a song that's become increasingly popular over the years, Never Tear Us Apart. Welcome to my guests, Alice Keefe and Al Newstead. Shall we start with the song itself? Alice, I think it's a very strange song, I must say, and I'll say why in a moment. But what do you think?
I agree with you, Andy, but it's a classic for a reason. It's a song that's never really gone out of circulation, which I think is interesting to consider when we're listening to all these covers. It's kind of theatrical, but it's quite blunt as well. The production is so crisp and I would say disciplined. It's a great vehicle for Michael Hutchence to just be the absolute charismatic frontman that he was. It's got tension, it's got release, and it feels really good to sing along to. Apologies to Al, but I was singing along to it when we were just listening to it in the studio. And I think that's partly in its design. It's written for an arena. We can talk about that more, I think, but it's written for people to sing along to.
Al, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of timeless. This was crowned the hottest Australian song as part of Triple J's special Hottest 100 countdown. So that really shows how it's endured, not just with people that grew up with it, but beyond that. I totally agree with Hutchence being the special source for this song. I think every time those strings come in, I'm always a bit like, oh man, they're way more synthetic than I thought. And then as soon as Hutchence starts singing, you're like, ah, here's the humanity of the song. Like, he's not being the rock star of New Sensation or the kind of sex symbol of Need You Tonight. He's really bringing this sense of drama. He's someone you would believe would make wine from your tears. He really conveys that sense of tortured romance that the song and the lyric really needs. And I think that's kind of the special ingredient that some cover versions really lack, is that presence and that vocal.
Yes.
The production plays a big role too, though.
Absolutely.
Huge.
Yep.
I think there are things that are missing from this song, and I think it's part of its power. There is no middle eight, there's no bridge, there's nothing like that. There's a verse, there's a chorus, there's two verses, and there's endless choruses. And I mean, the solos don't really happen. You know, just Kirk Pengelly picks up his sax and you think, wow, and then it stops. And then there are those two silences as well, as though that's where there should be something that there isn't there. And I wonder whether that is part of the drama and part of the power of the song.
Absolutely. And I think there are two factors that spring to mind for me. One is the stadium factor. In 1986, In Excess was invited to support Queen at Wembley. They were also playing other huge headlining shows all around Europe and America. So they knew what it felt like to perform on a stage like that. And so this song is so contained because it has to be able to carry and it has to have impact. Andrew Farris mentioned Fats Domino as an influence. And I think there's something to that, because when you look at pretty much every Fats Domino song, the structure is introduction, verse, set up the vibe and story, chorus, sax solo, very contained sax solo, angular, it happens and then it's gone. Then there's a verse, chorus, and an outro, which is essentially the template for this song. And if you listen to, say, a song like Ain't That a Shame, there's these piano rolls and then there's a pause, a stab and a pause, then the sax solo.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking to here. And I think Chris Thomas, the producer of this song, has an interesting lineage when you consider that too.
Yes, that is interesting, isn't it? And yet they're not power ballads.
Not at all. But if you look at some of the things that Chris Thomas produced, he was classically trained as a violinist. He played piano. He sat in on most of the White album in the late 60s with the Beatles. In fact, I think he was asked to produce it for a while. And then he worked with the Sex Pistols, Pretenders, Elton John. He produced Brian Ferry, Let's Stick Together in the late 70s. That's relevant to me. He produced John Cale's Paris 1919. And he was mix supervisor on Pink Floyd's Money, which again has that bluesy feel. It's in a different time signature, but there's that very famous sax solo followed by a very Pink Floyd outro. So I think when Chris Thomas came to produce this song, he had some very relevant experiences in his pocket. So while it's very much placed in the 80s, there's the synths and all of those very 80s sounds, you can hear that lineage.
Yeah, he's carrying all of that history with him, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think with the silences, the importance of that is, yeah, again, the drama and understanding that they're writing for a mass audience.
Yeah.
But they make the entrances so much more powerful. Like that sax solo is so iconic purely because it's blustering, borderline erotic, instantly hummable. And it's all about the entrance. It's all about the fact that you build up to that, the snare roll.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, here's a saxophone in the middle of this song. And the fact that it's gone almost as quickly as arrived kind of is the point. It's that dramatic impact. And the same way that like dusty guitar, spaghetti western guitar breaks the silence, that it's those features of the song that make it sort of so memorable.
It all strikes me as very intentional.
Mm.
And the theatricality of it is offset by some of those very clean choices. I read when I was looking about it that it's also based on a Viennese waltz, and I thought that was very spurious. It sounds like something AI might make up.
Yeah, it does.
Andrew Farris did say that, but the only similarity I can hear is that it's in a triple meter.
Yeah, well, it's 12-8, isn't it? It's a big four, and each beat is three
subdivisions. You've written a lot of waltzes, Andy. What do you reckon?
Not a waltz. Definitely not. Listen.
Deconstructed waltzes. No, it's not, is it?
I have another theory. See, perhaps this is the moment to play my theory. This is Percy Faith and his orchestra.
Yeah, there you go. That's it.
Muzak.
But, like, play Tales from the Vienna Woods, no, not at all. It's completely different. No. Johann Strauss would never.
Never. That's not, well, it's not anyway. It's too fast.
Yeah.
But it's very, very close to that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
very.
The same kind of 12-8 feel. It's the same tempo, actually. And in the chorus of Never Tear Us Apart, you even have the ba-da-da-dum going on underneath. So I'm sure it's all kind of way, way buried at the back of Andrew Harris's mind. But I don't think it's a deliberate reference, but it's there, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And if you've ever seen A Summer Place, which is, by the way, where that Max Steiner tune comes from, it's all about never being torn apart.
There you go.
Before we listen to a cover, should we talk about the words? It's just very past tense, like they have been torn apart.
Yeah, and there's something aspirational, this idea that this has happened to us, this tortured romance, but this idea that they've always got that moment, you know, we'll always have Paris, kid, that kind of attitude to it. Again, that enhances the drama of it as well, this narrative and bringing you into the conversation. Don't ask me what you know is true. We instantly kind of teleported into the idea of two people in conversation, even though it ends up being quite a one-sided conversation. The lyric is, in combination with the drama of the music, a big part of the appeal.
I was standing, you were there has to be one of my favourite lyrics just because it's so
obvious,
audacious to put that as a lyric.
Yeah.
Because it's so simple.
But then the math of two worlds colliding, it's really setting up. There's almost an escalation.
Yeah.
I was standing, you were there, two worlds colliding, and you're like, what happens next? Well, they never tear us apart.
Could we briefly also talk about the video clip really quickly before we go on to the covers?
Because yes, we must.
Charisma off the charts, Michael Hutchins in his great coat. But the intro, it's an extended intro with the embellishment that doesn't show up in any of the singles. Doo-doo-doo doesn't show up, as far as I can tell, in any of the singles that INXS released. And also there's a weird offbeat. The strings are playing. And it goes... It changes on the third beat. And I'm like, I don't know who made that choice and why they did it. They're like, okay, yeah, okay, we have to do the big wide pan across Prague, so we'd better just add an intro. Let's put some embellishments and put an offbeat in the strings. But I couldn't find any info about who did that. I'm assuming Chris Thomas and the band.
It sounds like a crossfade as well into the single, and a dodgy crossfade at that.
Maybe that's why it happens on the third beat, and they just were like, okay, that'll do.
All right, let's listen to a cover. Same key, same tempo, different voice.
Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you I love your precious heart. I
Well, that's Joe Cocker from 2002 from the album Respect Yourself, and really very close to the original version. We're talking cover stories on today's music show with Al Newstead and Alice Keith. Al, what does Joe bring, and is there anything missing apart from the sax?
I think he brings a lot more grit, a lot more masculinity, but by doing that, I think he kind of loses that Hutchence mystique. It reminds me of when he covered the Beatles for the hit. You know, he took Ringo's knees up. Oh, I get by with a little help of my friends. He turned into this big, masculine. And that's kind of what Joe Cocker does. That's what you come for. But I don't think it's quite the right fit for this song. The guitar solo choice instead of saxophone, it just feels very cliched, bluesy rock. Doesn't do much for me. It's a very faithful rendition, and because it's so similar, I kind of feel like it comes off second best compared to the original. I also think at the same time, he's probably doing some version of Joe Cocker restraint, because he could just go full hog from the beginning, and he doesn't. Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you
I love your precious heart. I think he does let rip towards the end of the song. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds colliding. The production just like really opens up as well, and I think that's an interesting side by side with the original. It highlights how contained and disciplined the INXS version is.
Mm.
He adds a whole lot of elements that INXS chose not to add. Joe Cocker can sing, and I think at moments he really lifts the song with the power of his voice, but yeah, for me the production and arrangement dampen that impact.
Yeah, it's not sufficiently different really, is it? It's the voice mainly that's different, and I'd love to have heard him do it in his pomp, you know, because that version of With a Little Help from My Friends was actually recorded in the 1960s. It came out before the Beatles version did. I mean, the voice was just in such good nick back then, but this is 35 years later and, you know, Joe had lived.
2002 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Makes me want to hear someone like Betty Levette do it.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't rule it out from Betty. She's always churning them out.
Yeah.
Let's go to somebody of a similar vintage and let's listen to what Tom Jones does with the song. We go up a tone because Tom can. Here he is with Natalie Imbruglia. What you know is true. I don't have to tell you. I love your precious heart. I was standing there. You were there. Two worlds collide, and they could never tear us apart. Yeah. I wonder what's going on with the sound effects in that.
Oh my gosh.
In that version.
It's 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's very obvious.
That explains everything.
Yeah. It does sound also like it's auditioning for a James Bond theme. And
totally.
Especially late 90s James Bond. We've had Garbage and Sheryl Crow probably would have done the Bond themes around then. And there's even maybe the suspended James Bond John Barry chords.
You're so right.
It's filling it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom Jones is saying, I can still do it, you know. Remember Thunderball? I'm still here. What do we think about this being a duet? I mean, I feel as though it sort of loses something if the other person is, as it were, standing there.
The triads at that one point. Yeah, sorry.
Alice needs a moment from this version,
I think. It hurt a little bit. But, you know, Natalie Imbruglia described this experience as surreal, and I think that's an excellent description for this cover.
Not saucy?
But, you know, context, I was in Germany in 1998 on exchange and Natalie Imbruglia was everywhere. And if I hadn't been over there at that time, I don't think I would have really understood just how big her reach was and just how huge she was. So I get the sense that, you know, right around that time, she got a random call from Tom Jones and she was just saying yes to every wild opportunity that came her way. So she was like, sure, why not? I'll do that. Perhaps didn't have a lot of say in the production approach. It's very much a 90s mashup production-wise.
Like, it feels more dated than the original.
It's borrowing from Portishead, Dido, you know, a lot of the songs that were big at the time, and not really giving much thought to whether it all hangs together.
No. And also in the original version, or even for that matter in the Joe Cocker version, the harmony does a lot of the work. I mean, when we go from the A minor of the verse to the C major of the chorus, that lifts the song. That changes the mood completely. And in a way, having those two voices there, and particularly, I'm sorry to say, Natalie's, it sort of cancels that out, doesn't it?
But also their voices don't match.
No.
Like, at all.
Not at all. He's going full martini in one hand, operatic cabaret pop star, and she's very by the. I think she gets one little in there. That we could fly because we all have wings. But some of us don't know why.
It's like a weird Disney duet gone wrong.
But it's a Disney film I would pay to go and see. All right, let's move on. When we talked about Reckless, we listened to a track from this album called Songs for Australia. We heard Laura Mvula's version of Reckless. Now this is The National doing our song of the day. Don't ask me what you know is true. That's The National's version of Never Tear Us Apart. It's the In Excess song that is the subject of today's cover story on The Music Show. My guests are Alice Keith and Al Newstead. Oh, they're phoning it in, aren't they?
I love The National. I will proudly put on some skinny jeans and listen to The National. But, yeah, they are. I actually was listening to this with my husband and he goes, oh, That sounds like something they recorded for a children's charity. And I looked it up and it was for Australian Bushfire Relief. So he was spot on. It exactly sounds like that. I reckon Luluk called them up and said, hey, there's an album being put together. Can you do a song? And they went into the studio and they built this from the national Petri dish.
Yes.
Probably recorded it in an afternoon. Sounds awesome. They're so good at what they do. All of the production is there. All of the sounds are there. The Desna brothers have cred for days. Aaron Desna works with Taylor Swift. Bryce Desna, he's often on Australian Chamber Orchestra programs. He's written music for the Australian String Quartet, Kronos Quartet. He knows what he's doing. These are incredible musicians. Matt Berninger's voice, I love it. But yeah, they recorded this in an afternoon, I'm sure of it.
There is no excuse, I think, is what you're saying.
I think your mileage really varies because it's very much in their sad dad indie rock sound, which I think people kind of love or loathe. And something I'm going to come back to time and again, I think with the versions we've got coming up, they omit the silences, which I think is integral to the song. Even the sax solo, like we still haven't had a sax solo, and they do the brass arrangement, like they've taken that line to sort of support that noisy guitar solo that's going on.
Yeah.
But for me, every time that comes around, it's like I'm so Pavlovian response to hearing that big blustering solo, and when it doesn't come, there's a sense of disappointment. I do appreciate that Matt Berninger really understands, even if it is potentially rushed, he really understands that the tenderness is the quality of the vocal. It's not a big, boastful rock song. But by the same token, I also don't know if his voice quite fits. And the fact that they've doubled the vocal kind of disguises the fact that it's not really in his range in a weird way. But I'm also a sucker for the National, so I kind of am like, oh, yeah, this one's good.
Oh, but see, I'm a sucker for the National too, and that's why I'm disappointed. But you're right that he does sort of get the song, which is more than can be said of Laura Mvula's version of Reckless. Oh. She had no idea what she was singing about. Circular key?
That's funny. I'm listening out, actually, for the vocal pulsing, who does and doesn't do it. Natalie leans into the, She goes there. I would be so curious to know whether Chris Thomas was like, okay, Michael, you get one big vocal moment and that's it. And the rest, you have to play it with a straight back. Or maybe it was his own instinct. I don't know. But I'm quite interested to hear who goes there for that moment, because it is such an obvious show your vocal chops moment.
I feel as though you've set up the 10 tenors.
Don't ask me. What you know is true. Don't have to tell you. I love your precious heart. I was standing. You were there. Two worlds collided, and they could never tear us apart. For 1,000 years, but if I hurt
that guitar solo is like being caressed by a tepid dishcloth. You know, like, just leave it out.
Yes.
Do some vocal percussion instead.
Oh, yeah. 10 tenors, give us a call.
I've got some production ideas for this group, yes.
But you got your silences, Al.
Yeah, you do. So points for that. It's not terrible. I feel it's more like aggressively fine. It's almost like they heard the Joe Cocker arrangement. We're like, yeah, that'll do. But it's not a song built for vocal harmonies in that way. It just doesn't do anything for me.
Who are the 10 tenors? I mean,
Do you know what? I literally just Googled that.
Yeah.
I don't.
Sleepy, grumpy.
I don't recognize them. I think there might have been some singing contestants in the mix there. And, you know, I've done a lot of Carols by Candlelight gigs in my time. And I think it would fit right in that context. You know, it's built for a large audience, but a very different audience to the INXS one. We mentioned the theatricality of INXS's version, and here's your answer for what it would sound like if you go full cabaret. And there are some even Queen harmonies, which is so incongruous. They go a little bit Bohemian Rhapsody.
I think it's pretty criminal that extended coda where they realise the fact that, oh, there's actually nothing for us to show off our harmonies. So there's this big, very unnecessary coda of dramatic harmonies.
Mm. That really is where things go right off the rails in this version.
And the phrasing, even something like, we could live, becomes we could live. It's like, that's not how it's done. Where's the swagger? Where's the drama?
It's not cool. It's not sexy.
The 10 tenors. All right, let's move right along. This is Cover Story on The Music Show. I'm Andrew Ford here with Al Newstead and Alice Keith. And we're going to listen to a version of Never Tear Us Apart, which is really quite different. This is Courtney Barnett.
Don't ask me. Is true. Don't have to tell you. I love your precious heart. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided. They could never tear us apart. We could live.
You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford, and I'm talking to Al Newstead and Alice Keith. It's a cover story. Never Tear Us Apart is the subject of today's show. And that was Courtney Barnett's very, very different version from 2018 from a rehearsal room recording. Well, Al, go on. Tell us what you think of that.
I'm so glad you included this version. I really like it. I know Courtney Barnett is a big INXS fan, specifically of Kick. The album came out the year she was born, 1987. I know she voted for it in the Hottest 100 of Australian Songs. And I think it's bold to do it as a solo version. But I think what she's done in her version, what she has achieved, is showing how the song can still retain so much of its power in the right hands in a stripped back setting. Was saying before, like, where's the sax? Where's the silences? This version has none of that, and it still really grabs you. And even Courtney, I think by her own admission, would say she's not the world's best singer, but she has emotion and she understands songwriting. I would argue she's one of our nation's best songwriters, and she really understands what works about this song and brings the least amount of all the versions that we've heard, but instead makes up for it in a lot of emotional resonance. You know, she turns it into a kind of much sadder affair without it feeling dour in the way that the Nationals version is, for instance. And also a quick shout out to Paul Dempsey, who also has covered this song on record and on tour quite a lot as a kind of solo rendition. And he has kind of done a little bit differently, where he tries to replicate the sax solo and tries to replicate the silences as a one-man performance. But this version that Courtney's done, it's so raw, it's so in the room, and it still totally works. It still shows you the strength of the song without needing all the bells and whistles.
Alice, the fact that it's so sad, this relationship is gone, hasn't it? I mean, they have been torn apart quite a long time before this song was recorded. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, and she taps into that and draws you right in, which is her superpower. I mean, I disagree with you and possibly Courtney. I think she's a brilliant singer because she lands her delivery every single time. That's her superpower. And I think, she has such an understated charisma. She has star power. She can just do anything. She can do whatever she wants and it'll work. And she has that same kind of intangible kind of magic, wild levity to her singing that Michael Hutchence had. Totally different style, of course. But, I mean, I think that's why Courtney's career has taken off, because she has that intangible quality that you just can't replicate or design. She just has it. You know, because she strips everything away, there's less for the ear to decode, so it feels a lot louder and has more impact. And it lands. And I also love her guitar playing.
Yeah, I love how she attacks the chords at the end of the phrasing.
Yeah.
Really letting the chord ring out. And that's the kind of bitterness that you interpret in the lyric, that it's not just sad, but she's also like a little bit pissed off that this didn't work out.
Yeah.
And that's conveyed through the guitar.
It also answers the question, can this song stand on its own and in her hands? It absolutely can.
And they could never tear us apart.
Andy, what do you think of it? Does it land for you, or is it a bit irritating?
No, it's exactly the point of this series, because she's made the song her own. I mean, there's nothing left of in excess in the song at all.
Yeah.
It is just the words and the chords, and that's it really. And everything else is Courtney Barnett. So that's kind of the point, I think, of Cover Story, that she has found things there that perhaps the original composer and lyricist hadn't even quite realised were there.
Yeah, it's the first song we've heard so far that tells me something new about the song.
Yeah, well put.
Yes, but we haven't heard it in a North Lanarkshire accent yet.
Tell you I love you, precious.
That's from 2011, the Twilight Sads version of Never Tear Us Apart. Alice, do you like this?
I love it. I love everything about it. And I know I'm going to have it on rotation because I want to keep hearing it. It's so atmospheric, and James Graham's voice has the perfect amount of grit. I love his delivery and the accent, of course. I love the sense of urgency, the way that, you know, when he sings Some of Us Don't Know Why, it's slightly under pitch. He's reaching. He's not quite getting there. I'm convinced that's entirely intentional. I love the synths. It's so good.
I'm a sucker for the accent as well, that Scottish brogue. But it's also got that kind of dejection and moodiness that probably only comes from living in Scotland to pull it off. And that synthetic kind of haunting quality, it's of a piece with the Courtney Barnett version where it's underscoring the sadness and the frustration of it. And I think that's the way, if I was going to cover this song, I'm not, if I was going to cover this song, that's the direction I would head into, because I think there's more room to move thematically, musically in that way than there is trying to underscore the drama of, say, these other versions that we've heard, and trying to replicate that very specific production and arrangement of the original, I think, is a bit of a losing battle. And doing something like this, where it's much more about the mood and twisting the mood in a way that's defeated and dejected, is really compelling.
I wasn't thinking about pauses or sax solos
at all.
I was just completely on board.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's my favourite version that we've heard, and in fact that we are going to hear. I love the fact that they have, again, like Courtney Barnett, made it their own. And it is, it's terribly sad. Unlike the next version, because you can't be too sad if you're trying to sell stuff. And this is from a John Lewis ad. Not the first time we've had a John Lewis ad on Cover Stories. I'm not sure what that says about us. This is Paloma Faith, no relation to Percy.
Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you I love your precious heart. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided, and they could never tear us apart. We could live.
Paloma Faith from a 2012 John Lewis ad. She's got a great voice. What do we think of the rest of it, Alice?
I feel like, as well as being an ad, is another James Bond audition.
Yeah, the timpani role is James Bond.
She has a great voice. She doesn't do the John Travolta, way, yay, yay, which I respect.
But some of
she is on record saying she really, really, really wants to do a James Bond theme.
Yeah.
And that Shirley Bassey once dubbed Paloma Faith as the new her.
Yeah. Shirley Bassey is the touchstone, isn't she?
Yeah. Well, she's got the Shirley Bassey nod of approval.
The original kind of hasn't really ever gone away as the definitive version. It's been big in every decade, really. And so having a new version, I always feel, can't replace the original because it hasn't done enough new. And this is really in that ballpark where it's like, it's not a bad version at all, but it's kind of like, well, the original's right there. And I know that this version has been used a lot in TV and film, things like Yellow Jackets, Law and Order SVU, but so is the original. Like, the original was just recently, I think, used in one of the seasons of Euphoria. It was used in Baby Girl, a really pivotal scene with Nicole Kidman. That's kind of like an A24 kind of erotic thriller. She got the rights to that song. So again, it's something like this where it's not doing anything dramatically different from the original's arrangement that I'm kind of like, I can just go straight to the source.
I feel like this is more a vocal showcase for Paloma Faith than a new interpretation of the song.
Totally. It's from an ad campaign. I mean, that's what can you say?
No, exactly, which is why we need to hear it in French. Many bands who've done their own tribute albums, but NXS did in 2010, Original Sin, and the vocals were sung by Mylène Farmer and Ben Harper. And the French lasts, what, about one verse and the first line of the chorus, and then they think, come on, let's sing the original words, shall we? I have to say that I find that disappointing on many, many levels.
They do the vocal pulsing, of course they do, in duet form. The vocal fry, all of it.
I think maybe the logic behind it, particularly with Ben Harper's vocal, might have been like, all right, well, we can't do Michael Hutchence, so I'm just going to do a totally different approach to the delivery and the phrasing. And even the arrangement, like that really insistent groove, is such a juxtaposition to the original slow, steady drama. At least it's refreshing, maybe, even after coming from, like, that commercial Paloma Faith version. It's kind of like, well, this is different, with a capital D, but it doesn't service the song. It's doing the opposite of what Courtney Barnett and the Twilight Sad are doing, which is really thinking about, like, what is the emotion of this song? What is the drama? What services that? This is kind of like, what's the biggest orchestra we can do? What's the wildest choice we can make? If I was being charitable, it's a very interesting version, but I think it kind of does a disservice to the intention of the song.
Yeah, you don't have to be charitable here.
There's a whole extended coda where Ben Harper is just absolutely going hell for leather with the melody all over the place.
And, you know, Ben Harper has form. He's one of the great noodlers.
Like, you're a big fan, aren't you, Alice?
Yeah, my friends and I actually used to find the most ridiculous vocal melismas that he does in his live shows and send them to each other. It's like onanistic coloratura. It's horrible. So I really don't think he was thinking too carefully about his delivery and interpretation here. He's like, I'm Ben Harper. I'm going to do what I do on this song. So, I mean, I already had one eyebrow raised coming into this and it didn't disappoint. I feel like they're trying to set up a bit of a Serge Gainsbourg, Jane Birkin vibe at the start, but then Ben Harper's like, okay, we've done that. Let's move on.
He is no Serge Gainsbourg. No.
And I'm certain he's wearing his hat while he's singing this too. I just know it.
Just the thing of having it in French language feels like a very lazy shorthand for like, it's a romantic song, so let's sing it in French. Mm. It just doesn't feel well-intentioned or well-executed.
Yes, you feel as though they should have done another video clip by the Seine instead of Vultava.
Yeah, No, thanks.
All right. Well, there we go. It's a shame that we have come to kind of a crashing halt on that particular version of the song, but we can at least return to hear In Excess in its original guise in a live version recorded at Wembley Stadium in 1991. Before we do that, I have to thank you both very much indeed, Alice Keith and Al Newstead, for being my guests on today's music show on this version of Cover Story.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us, Andy. Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you I love you, she's all I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided, and they could never tear us apart. In Excess, Live Baby Live at Wembley Stadium in 1991. And that's it for today's Cover Story. You can find my colleagues Al Newstead and Alice Keith at Double J and ABC Classic, respectively. You'll find links on our website. The music show is produced by Sky Kirkham and C. Benedict. Technical production this week from Tegan Nichols and Marcus Hobbs. The show is made on Gadigal, Gundungurra and Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung country. And next time on Cover Story, Dobby and Vanessa Hughes join me to take on the artists who have taken on the Beatles.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.